Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 17th of June. And the question of this hour, which is the question of the summer in many ways, should healthcare reform include the choice of a public insurance plan? Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, has said that the show by President Obama will be a show of what he's made of, whether he's willing and able to take on the most formidable lobbying coalition he's faced so far on an issue that will define his presidency. Senator Chuck Grassley has said there's a lot of us that feel that the government is an unfair competitor. We have to keep what we have now strong and make it stronger. Joining us this hour, we'll have two guests. Jody Schneider will be with us at the top of the show, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly. Karen Davenport joining us later, director of health policy for the Center for American Progress. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls as we debate health care reform. We get many phone calls, and you're welcome to join us at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Good morning, Jody. Thanks very much for being with us again.
Good morning.
Hi. Well, this is quite a battle, isn't it? And it's gone on for some time, and it's going to go on all summer.
Right. Well, and they're really just getting started with the legislation. I mean, we've been talking about this legislation, and there's been all kinds of, you know, hints about what might be coming. But the actual writing of the legislation and the scoring of it, the figuring out the price tag by the Congressional Budget Office, just started. So they're off to the races now. But it is going to be to get this done by August, which is when the president says he would like to see it done, and some of the Democratic leadership are pushing for, is going to be really tough. It's a very, very complicated package of legislation. You're going to see competing legislation. Even within, you know, certain chambers, there's going to be different legislation. And even within the Democratic Party, there's going to be different kinds of legislation. So I think it's going to be a complicated process, but very interesting that we're talking about, you know, money and health and right. And the president's priorities. And it's going to be an exciting summer.
How important is a public choice plan to the president?
Well, I think getting a large number of uninsured people covered is of huge importance to the president. That is the reason that they're doing, you know, that they're overhauling the healthcare system. They say it's to try to bring costs in line, but it's also, you know, the core reason is to really significantly lower the number of uninsured, which is now at about 24 million is the estimate.
Mm-hmm. And the opposition to this, I understand, is pretty fierce to any kind of a public plan. Tell me what kinds of lobbying firms are in Washington right now saying we really don't want a public plan.
Yeah, well, the opposition to the public plan is on several fronts. One is the cost, and that's going to be a huge problem for the White House and for the congressional Democrats trying to move a plan. For instance, the plan that the first draft of a bill that started moving through the Senate Help Committee, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which is chaired by Edward Kennedy, who, of course, is Senator Kennedy is sort of the big champion of health care in Congress. He, and particularly in the Senate, that bill would have, at the cost, and it was just scored by the Congressional Budget Office, so they actually put a price tag on it, they scored that at more than $1 trillion, and it would not cover, it would only cover, I think it's the estimate is 18 million rather than 24 million people. So right away you start seeing, the Republicans and lobbying groups came out, you know, fighting that, saying this is ridiculous. This is, you know, a ton of money, and it's not covering everybody. The other opposition to a public plan is how it would be paid for, not only the cost of it, but how it would be paid for. Would there be taxes? Would there be cuts in benefits? And then the big argument that a lot of these groups bring up, as well as Republicans in the leadership in Congress, is the R word, rationing. Are you going to start cutting the benefits that people currently get, and particularly when they really need them, when they have a, you know, significant illness? Are you going to be cutting those benefits to be able to serve other people?
Mm-hmm. Overall, because a public plan would have so much leveraging ability, would it indeed bring down the cost of health care in this country so that doctors and hospitals wouldn't be making as much money?
Presumably it would, but how getting there becomes the real question. For instance, the Kennedy plan, the plan that just is going through the Senate Health Committee, basically would set up, and so it's somewhat public. I mean, when you say public plan, there's different varieties of this. But basically, Kennedy's bill would set up a system of state-run gateways to help people without health insurance shop for it. So basically, they would be saying, okay, here, you could come to us and buy health insurance, and there would be subsidies. Those earning less than five times the poverty level, which is about $110,000 for a family of four this year, would be eligible for subsidies. And at the same time, it would impose new regulations on insurers, barring them from denying coverage for pre-existing conditions, limiting their profits, things like that. Mm-hmm. So it would not. The point is that the Democrats in Congress keep making, this would not change things for people who currently have health insurance, say, through their employers. But, of course, if people are going to get a better deal from the government, particularly if they're going to get a subsidy, and this may cause employers to stop offering the insurance, and therefore people would all go into the public plan, and it would cost more.
Mm-hmm. When Senator Grassley says there's a lot of us that feel that government is an unfair competitor, we have to keep what we have now strong and make it stronger. What kind of plan is being offered to take what we have now and make it stronger?
Right, and this is kind of the focus of the Senate Finance Committee, that deals with taxation in the Senate. They're trying to write a health care bill with a price tag of less than $1 trillion, so everything's relative in terms of cost. But they want to try to find a way to cover as many uninsured people as possible while keeping costs down, trying to keep people in the plans that already have them. One of the ways that, and we haven't seen this bill yet, they're still writing it, but basically they want to avoid kind of getting everybody out of the plans and employers saying, okay, well, people are going to the public plan, therefore I don't need to offer insurance. They may do things like actually require employers who have existing plans to keep those plans or to to minimize the effect of that, they could pare back the subsidy levels, which would presumably make the coverage people who are already getting through their employer comparatively more attractive, or put what they're calling pay or play requirement on employers, requiring them to pay a substantial fine if they were to drop coverage and force more employees into the plans. So that is an option that we are likely to see soon as well.
Mm-hmm. And the president, my understanding is you only need 51 votes here, so the president could really get, do you think, 51 votes to make sure that a signature piece of his plan, the public option, is there in September?
Well, you need 51 votes. What they're doing is they have the possibility to do this through what they call budget reconciliation, which is fast track. It's a fast track process. The House put that language in there to kind of, give themselves insurance, if you will, that to try to do it that way in the Senate. The Senate hasn't yet said they would do it as fast track. So it's unclear whether they really only need the 50, the majority, or whether they're, and for certain things, they're even getting things to the floor, they may need 60 votes. So in the Senate, it's a very difficult situation. Not only, whether you need the 60 or the 50, but also any one senator can block something from going to the floor. Mm-hmm. They can put a hold on legislation, and they do.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate is much more a compromised situation. I think that's why you're seeing these competing bills already, and senators are starting to talk about, ways to try to get things to the floor. In the House, they can, they can basically, they govern by majority rule in the House Rules Committee, which is basically an arm or a tool of the majority, sets the rules for debate and sets the rules for amendments. And basically, once the majority wants something, they will get it through the House. Very different situation in the Senate.
Right. What about the number of lobbyists who are there now? Robert Reich has been writing a lot of blogs on healthcare in the last few months, actually, saying that the opposition is just formidable and that everybody's got top guns in Washington right now, particularly the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies who stand to lose a whole lot of money in this, and they're just vehemently opposed. And they give a whole lot of money to members of Congress.
That's right. And, you know, to do this kind of overhaul, maybe nothing, you know, nothing quite this drastic, but overhauls of healthcare and trying to get more people insured and trying to, you know, change the way healthcare is offered in this country. Since the Johnson administration, there have been attempts to do that. Obviously, the most visible of them before this was during the Clinton administration when Hillary Rodham Clinton got involved in that as well. But there have been attempts to do this since the Johnson administration, and there's been several reasons they haven't gotten through. One is the huge cost. You know, trying to figure out how you pay for this. The other is the fact that there are very, very, you know, tough lobbying groups, as you mentioned, the medical association, the associations that deal with not only doctors and hospitals, but pharmaceutical companies, pharmaceutical benefits plans, and insurers. They don't want to see, they're afraid of what change could mean for them. And just changing their systems and the bureaucracy would be enormously, complicated and potentially expensive as well. So you have a lot of people who are invested in the status quo, and they do give money. The other problem that they're going to have is that in the House, again, they can get things through, and I think they will get some piece of legislation through the House. But the problem is, for the White House, is how far will it go? Because there's a lot of people, everybody in the House has to run next year. 2010 is a midterm election year, and you can bet that, you know, Republican opponents are already starting their 30 and 60 second spots about how people voted on this legislation. Right. And saying things like, you know, do you want to have your health care rationed? And do you want to have, if you have good health care now, you may have to give it up to ensure not even everybody else, to ensure a few more people, and it's going to cost your kids and your grandkids, money going forward. I heard an ad the other day, it's going to be $1 million a family by the time you get done, that kind of thing. And this does add to the deficit, and they can use those kinds of things against their primary opponents and against their opponents in 2010. And a lot of moderate Democrats are going to have to think hard, particularly freshmen who may be somewhat vulnerable in 2010, about how they vote for this and how they frame their votes.
Well, there's a key question you just asked, and I wonder how the American public would answer this. It seems as though a lot of people, businesses, small businesses, a number of people have to pay huge amounts for copays. They're not covered for pre-existing conditions, et cetera, et cetera. Is the question, how good is your health care now? And would most Americans say, I love it?
No, I don't think it. I think very few people would say they love it.
Yeah.
I don't know many people like that. I don't assume you do either. But I think people are afraid of what else they would get instead. Even if we don't like it, even if our, you know, healthcare premiums have gone up, those of us who are covered through our employers have been seeing that. We're having to pay higher copays. Fewer things are covered. You know, you have to have more out of pocket, all that. But then when people think about not being covered, particularly for catastrophic things, and not having their children covered, or having to go through very complicated, you know, what may be viewed as complicated plans, rather than just having a certain amount taken out of your paycheck every week, I think a lot of people may be, you know, worried about what that change could mean. And I think people who are already in Medicare and in Medicaid, but particularly Medicare, seniors, you know, have gotten used to the changes in Medicare. A lot of them are on the Medicare Advantage plan now. They're having their pharmaceutical benefits covered because that was passed a few years ago at a very expensive cost. I think a lot of seniors are not going to be happy about seeing major changes that would affect them, particularly if their Medicare benefits are going to be taxed, and particularly if they're going to be cut.
Right. So guide me through, before we start taking phone calls, what a public plan would be, a state-administered kind of plan, or an expansion of everybody through Medicare. How do we do it if we do it?
Well, I think, again, there are going to be a variety of proposals that are going to be wending their way through the Congress. We know yet exactly what it's going to be like. The Senate Finance Panel's plan that I just spoke about is one thing that we may see, where they basically allow this exchange marketplace where insurance plans could be bought with subsidies for some people, and then but also penalties for employers who drop people, because the fear is that sending too many people to the marketplace, the cost goes way up, and how do you pay for that? That's sort of what's moving through the Senate right now. The one plan has a bill and has a bill number in the Senate is this exchange marketplace plan with subsidies for people to buy, that get subsidies from the government to buy into it. The other kinds of plans that they're talking about right now are more kind of centrist plans. This is some in the House because they're trying to basically, get some Republican votes, get some and keep some moderate Democrats. Some of this would include partly this exchange plan, but also would include ways to get more employers to offer health care to their employees, and some of this offering them through more groups and associations, that kind of thing. This is another proposal that is being developed. One of the things the Obama administration is trying not to do, is trying very much not to do, is to have there be a specter of a plan like a plan you see in Europe, where the government basically is the administrator of health care. Mm-hmm. They have very much backed away from trying to do anything like that, saying we don't want to go into the business of health care. We want people who offer health care to offer health care. We want employers to still offer health care. If you have a health insurance plan, you should still be able to keep it. We want to get the uninsured insured.
Phone calls for Jody in just one moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jody Schneider is senior editor of Congressional Quarterly, and we are looking specifically at the public option in health care reform this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, starting with Dan from Madison. Hi, Dan.
Morning. Thanks for the program. One comment and one question. The comment is simply that anyone who doesn't think, if I didn't think that my health care was rationed today, I would fit in one of two categories. I would either be a CEO with a super deluxe Cadillac premium health plan, or I would be someone who's never had health insurance. Anyone who's ever had health insurance knows that their health care is rationed today by the health insurance companies. And the question is, regarding competition, FedEx and UPS compete all day and all night with the post office, and they do really well. Whether you look at, space and aeronautics, or you look at Amtrak, the private sector is constantly competing with the public sector and usually doing pretty darn well. I'm not sure, unless you set absurd levels of subsidy, I'm not sure I see why this would be any different.
Judy.
Well, I think that is the difference, that there would be subsidies so that people would be able to go. Either people who don't have insurance now, and of course some of the fear of some people about the cost is that people who do have insurance now would say, well, hold on, if the government is offering it, or there's an exchange plan where I can go in and I can get coverage and then I can get a subsidy for the coverage, it might be cheaper than what my employer is doing. They might be sending people there. So I think subsidy is is what is different about that. And obviously this proposal came from Senator Kennedy, who's a liberal. We may see plans that are less liberal than this come about. But I think this is, subsidy is at the heart of this.
Unless you had something else, Dan?
Well, I mean, the government pays for roads and schools, and we find a way to manage those costs. I don't see why this would be radically different.
Well, they're talking about $1 trillion just for this proposal. I mean, one of the hallmarks, one of the big challenges has been to bring health care costs under control. The government and private insurers have been unable to do that in recent years. They've been skyrocketing, as you know, and adding people to the roles who don't currently get health care. And, we could debate all day about the wisdom of setting up a system in which you have 24 million people, including children, who are uninsured. But the fact is, adding significant numbers of them to be insured is going to be very expensive. It simply is. And the question is, how do you pay for that? Yes, you're already paying for the roads and the schools. How do you add health care?
Well, have we decided that, indeed, that's the morally correct thing to do, to insure all those people, or are we still debating that?
No, well, I think the administration is making, you know, its point, and they made this point during the campaign, and they won the election. So presumably, you know, the American people, or a good number of them, agree that, you know, it is a problem for America to have 24 million people who don't have insurance, including large numbers of children.
Right. Thanks, Dan, very much for the call. Let's go next to Mark from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a little frustrated, I think, by the whole coverage of this in the media. The term rationing, I mean, obviously, as Dan said, our care is rationed. If you're sick and you can't get health insurance, then your care is being rationed. There are 24 million, apparently, I thought it was 47 million who are uninsured. So care is rationed already, and so it's kind of this, the fear-mongering doesn't work. I lived in Europe for a long time. I have a lot of friends in Europe, and none of them ever talk about trying to switch to a health care plan like we have in America. There are different plans in Germany and France, but they work. And so this idea that socialized medicine or government-run medicine doesn't work really simply is not true, and you don't see a lot of accurate information, I don't think, in the media. And then one final thing in terms of paying for it, one thing that's maybe important, and actually Senator Clinton used to talk about that, was the fact that everybody has to have insurance. In Germany, where I lived, I couldn't get a residency permit without finding health insurance. And I think part of it is the idea of there are a lot of people who feel they don't need it, and those people, everybody has to pay for it, because eventually we're going to assume everybody needs it, just like with car insurance, that at least in theory, if you're driving, then you need to have insurance.
Judy.
Yeah, actually, in some of these proposals, and again, they're just developing, but there's been talk about kind of this mandating of insurance, that people have to get it either through their employer, or they would have to get it through one of these government plans, or, you know, other association plans or whatever they are. There was a lot of talk about that, as you recall, during the campaign, and Senator McCain at that point kind of made a point of criticizing then-Senator Obama, saying, well, okay, what are you going to do? You're going to start punishing people and, you know, throwing people in jail because they don't have health insurance. But I do think that that is recognized, that having everybody in the system at some point is important. And this is a point that the Obama administration is making about reducing health care costs, because they keep talking about that as well, that having these large numbers of people going to hospitals for their health care, emergency rooms for their health care, because they can't afford preventative care and they don't have insurance for preventative care, that eventually some of those costs, you know, those costs will come out of the system, which will lower some costs.
And your number of 27 million uninsured comes from where, Jody?
Well, the number I was using, and this, you know, again, there's lots of numbers around, but the number I was using referred to the number of people that we believe would be right now. There would be in this bill, there would be 24. Million people who were still not insured. So we're saying that there's about 54 million now who are not insured. Is a round number. The 30 million people would. There's 54 million is a round number. 24 million would get insured under the Kennedy plan. More than 30 million people would remain uninsured if the bill were enacted. This is according to the Congressional Budget Office.
Thanks, Mark, for your call. Scott from La Crosse. Hi.
All right. Thanks again for another wonderful program. My initial question was if you could briefly, Jody, describe, we're hearing about these co-op plans and what that would mean and how they would work. But since I've been on hold, I heard you mention the political risks of backing a program like this that could be used against candidates as they ran, or incumbents as they ran again in 2010. Is there also, though, a flip side to that coin, where as much time as all these senators and congresspeople have put into this legislation, of there being some kind of a backlash if they come a cropper and say, gee, we spent a whole lot of your time and money, and what do we have to show for it? Status quo. Would there be a negative political impact on their careers if that were the case?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think that is a good question. Right, and that's always, you know, you get there's political risk both ways. If you pass something and some people obviously on the other side go after you about it, but if you don't, it's, well, can't even get things through with both chambers of the government, you know, both chambers of Congress and the White House controlled by Democrats, you can't get this through, you know, good luck to you kind of thing. But I think at this point, one of the questions that is going to end up becoming front and center before the Democratic leadership of both chambers is how big a piece of this to bite off. And obviously the White House wants them to bite off, you know, the whole enchilada, so to speak. They want them to, you know, have a health care overhaul, which ensures many more people who are currently insured, that helps bring costs down, that gets the employers involved, you know, the whole thing. I think in the end, they have to deal with the politics of the realistic and what are they going to be able to get through their chambers. It may be a much more modest kind of plan that involves insuring more people than are currently insured and bringing costs down in certain ways, but without really touching Medicare, for instance, and without really touching the current system, you know, the employer health-based system. They could do something kind of in between, and that's what we may end up seeing politically.
It was LBJ who got Medicare through, wasn't it?
Right, right. We've been debating, you know, how to insure people effectively since LBJ.
And did he have one horrendous fight on his hands when he was moving this through?
Well, there have always been fights about this, but at that point, they, you know, basically, as they did, as the Bush administration did with the Medicare, prescription drug benefit, was to basically write a check. To say, okay, we're going to fund this. This is important for the government to fund. That is not something that the administration nor the Congress can do at this point. Almost $1 trillion on various bailouts over the past, you know, year or so. The deficit is high. Revenues are not coming in at the rate that they were the last few years because of the recession. And so at this point, just sort of funding it, saying, okay, we're going to do this the way we do a war, that kind of thing. We're just going to go ahead and approve it, is not possible. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to come up with some way to at least, at least pay for part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when it really starts getting tough.
It sure is. Scott, thanks ever so much for your call. Anne from Madison, hi.
Hi, I'd like to counter the argument by insurance company and medical industry proponents that that government payment is government operation of a single-payer system or any other kind of public system. In countries that have a national health care system, and that's all civilized countries, I don't include us, the government doesn't operate these systems. They don't provide, as far as I know, they don't provide the doctors. People can pick any doctor they want, and the government, which that's us in a democracy, has the largest tax base you'll find anywhere, then pays for it without fuss and without a profit motive. And I'm really worried that Obama, who has said that he would, for every dollar spent in a new program, he would insist that dollars in another program be reduced, dollar for dollar. He hasn't applied that criterion to bailouts of huge banks, investment banks. He's just applied it to social programs. And the talk about, I guess this would, you know, any change would probably eliminate Medicare, which has been so successful and doesn't have a profit motive. I just think this is, we may have a Trojan horse here that's going to end up worse, if such a thing is possible, than the present system, because people will have to buy, I bet, in the end, some kind of private insurance, and there are no regulations that stop private insurers from gouging us and not providing medical treatment.
Judy.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that last statement. I mean, they can't, you know, there are they're a business, and they're subject to regulations the same way as other businesses are. We could argue or we could debate about whether those regulations are stringent enough, but there are no, you know, they still have to, the most insurers are regulated by the states in which they operate, and they do have regulations they have to face. But as to the question about whether you end up with something in the middle, I think that's an interesting point. And I think there are people on both sides who actually feel that that would be worse, that, you know, if we're either going to have the system we have with its problems, or we're going to have a system where, the intended benefits that the administration wants to see of bringing costs down overall, getting rid of inefficiencies, and insuring more people, if you end up with something in between, you may get a little bit, but it may end up costing you more. And I think that is a worry of some people. If you don't kind of go along all the way in this, that it's going to be, it's going to be a more difficult situation. That's one of the points the White House is making, that they would like to see this solved, in an overall way, in a dramatic way, mm-hmm. Rather than kind of do a little bit here, a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. We are adding to the conversation now, and we thank you, Anne, very much for your call. Karen Davenport, who's Director of Health Policy for the Center for American Progress. Karen, before this position, served as Washington Director for Medicare Rights Center, coordinating the organization's national policy activities. Her expertise is health insurance, health system reform, Medicaid, Medicare, and long-term care. We'll be taking phone calls as we continue. Jody is staying with us as well. We have to find out what the status is of various bills in the House and the Senate, too, which Jody is very much on top of. Karen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's a pleasure.
Is your organization in favor of a public insurance plan? And if so, what kind of plan would you support?
We are in favor of a public insurance plan. I'd say we haven't, put out a proposal per se that's ours, but we're interested in a public plan that really provides new competition in health insurance markets where there are, that we've seen so much consolidation and so many major insurers who really control the market, and a public insurance plan that provides people with new choices. So whether it's to join that plan, to make sure that they have a broad choice of providers, I think the key things about the public plan are its ability to create a new a new level of competition within health insurance markets, and by doing that to really help bring down costs for everybody, whether they choose a public plan or a private plan.
Mm-hmm. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about the cost of such a plan, which seems phenomenal. I know that this is problematic for trying to overhaul a healthcare system. How would we pay for this?
Well, you mean the public insurance plan or
right.
the overall health reform
plan?
No, the
public insurance plan.
Well, for a public insurance plan, I mean, people pay premiums into it. You could certainly structure it so that it's self-supporting, that the people who pay the premiums are, overall covering the cost of the care they receive. It would need to have the kind of reserve requirements that private plans have and to, have the same kind of solvency standards. That's, an idea that's been put on the table by various different parties in the debate. Certainly one of the charges against a public plan is that it could, if it were going insolvent, draw on the federal treasury. That's all kind of a design question, and as the proposal goes through Congress, whether those choices are made.
Mm-hmm. Jody, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, that is one option, and it is being discussed. Again, we're seeing, bits and pieces of plans here. We haven't really seen, and the White House, interestingly, I think trying to avoid what happened during the Clinton administration, has not kind of come up with a plan, has not said, okay, this is what we want to see, and sent it to Congress or even sent a piece of it to Congress. They're sort of saying, here's the elements we would like in a plan. Congress, you go do it now.
Right.
So I think there's some miscommunication out there. In the public, they say, okay, the administration's plan. Well, the administration really hasn't come up with a plan. Politically, they're trying to be savvy about it.
Right.
But I think that, that's certainly something that is on the table and is being discussed. Again, the cost of that, how would you structure those premiums? And how would that work vis-a-vis an employer, the system we have now, And would you be then having people, if the premiums were a lot less, you would have people leaving the current system? And is that something we want to see?
Mm-hmm. Karen, should the president, do you think, come up with a plan and really push it? He's popular right now.
Well, I think we saw the dangers in 1993 of the White House writing a bill itself and coming up with a plan that's that detailed. What President Obama did a little while ago was he did lay out in a letter to the congressional leaders what his view was of what key elements of a plan should be. So I'm not going to get all of them, but he certainly talked about a public plan. He talked about appropriate insurance rating. He talked about sort of some of the different financing options. So he's been laying out kind of what his markers are. What I think is probably more important than putting out a detailed plan, per se, from the White House, is to have them be very engaged, and particularly the president, be very engaged and in a very public way in making this happen. He has certainly taken a hands-off approach in the, you know, saying this is Congress is going to do this and it's up to them. But at the same time, we have seen him start to take a more active role in health reform in terms of his speech to the AMA earlier this week, his use of the radio addresses. And I think that kind of leadership in the public sphere, but also leadership behind the scenes on where things need to go and helping work those pieces out is going to be extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to an email, Sarah from Columbus, Wisconsin. We currently get our insurance through my husband's employer because there is none offered by my employer. For our family of four, we're paying $500 a month, more than that, with a copay and a $1,000 per person deductible. This is better than our previous employer in offered insurance plan, which had us sitting in $4,500 of debt after a child was hospitalized for a week. If there was a chance that we could find any insurance plan that would save us financially, we'd take it. Right now, it sounds like we'd still be stuck in a situation where we have crummy, expensive insurance, even if something passes. This makes me sad and a bit annoyed. Jody?
Well, I'm not sure there's a question there, but I do think the point I'll make is I do think there's a lot of concern, as expressed by, you know, this email writer, about what, even if they don't like their current insurance, they have it. And I think there is a lot of concern, and the Republicans who are opposed to doing the overhaul, of course, are you know, going to make a lot of this, and they're going to use this kind of worry against you know, people that they want to run against, and particularly in the House in 2010. But I think there's a lot of concern among the populace, and you see this in some polls, although it's kind of hard to capture in polling, that even though they're not happy with the system, they're not happy with the cost, they're worried about if they were to lose their job or their spouse was to lose their job, whether they would be able to get new health insurance, but that they still are concerned about what would replace it. And they don't want to pay more, and they don't want to lose you know, the ability to do things like pick their own doctors, even if they're in a PPO or an HMO where they don't have as much choice, they still feel like they have some choice.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to respond to that email, Karen?
Well, I guess part of what Jody said I would agree with. I think that one of the key issues for the person who wrote the email, but for a lot of other people, is how affordable is coverage going to be for their family, period. You know, if we have health care reform, you know, what will premiums look like? What kind of protections will they have in terms of help with premiums? And but, you know, if health care reform doesn't happen, I think that how expensive coverage is and will become is a big concern for them, too. There is certainly discussion in the bills that are being batted about in Congress about, you know, having an upper threshold on what proportion of their income families would need to pay for premiums, or in some cases the bills talk about premiums and co-payments combined, and the writer talked about their co-insurance and deductible issues too. And I think that's just one of the really key issues for how successful healthcare reform is. You know, how much does it help to control costs overall and therefore keep premiums down, but also what kind of help and protections are in place for families. And we don't know the answers to that yet, but I think she's raising one of the key questions in the debate.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. And we're talking this hour about whether or not health care reform should include the choice of a public insurance plan. And if so, what kind of form that plan should take? If not, why should we not have such a plan? And we're welcoming your calls. Our guests this hour are Karen Davenport, Director of Health Policy for the Center for American Progress, and Jody Schneider, Senior Editor of Congressional Quarterly. The email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our show this Wednesday, the Milwaukee Art Museum is highlighting American originals through two groundbreaking exhibits this summer. We'll be looking at the work of eight American artists. They are called The Eight and the furniture designs of Charles Rolfs. We'll have Lori Winters with us, who's the director of exhibits for the Milwaukee Art Museum. And we'll also be speaking with the curator of the American Decorative Art 1900 Foundation in New York and with the curator of collection at the Terra Foundation of American Art in Chicago. So that's coming up. All right, back to phone calls. And let's go to Ray from Merrimack next. Hi, Ray.
Hi. This idea of health insurance with someone making a profit, I can't understand why we need to have to pay our health insurance $100, and they put $25 in their pocket, and then buy as much, as little health care as they can, and of course, 5% of that they put in their pocket goes back to the politicians to keep the things the way they are. Why we eliminate the health insurance and go to Medicare? I've been on Medicare for 10 years. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And it can be managed, and I don't understand why insurance companies should get paid because I'm sick.
All right. Thanks, Ray, for the call. Karen?
Oh, Ray's expressing a very strongly held point of view by a group of folks who are really engaged in health care reform, which is folks who think that we should be taking insurance companies out of the business altogether and use a single payer plan. And in his case, he talked about having everybody in Medicare. And that's a view that is certainly held by a strong group of people. One of the other approaches that people are taking and that is in the Kennedy legislation that is beginning markup in the Senate today is to limit the amount of administrative costs that insurers are able to hold from premiums so that, at least a minimum amount, and that minimum is some states do this already and is often set at something like, 85% of premium dollars have to go towards health benefits and limiting it to 15 or in some cases 10% to administrative costs. And that's an approach that maintains the use of health insurance as a way to pool risk across, all of the population, using them as kind of the middleman, but to limit the amount of money that can go into administrative spending. The rate that he quoted of 25% is in comparison to some of the smaller insurance companies in the market kind of low. Administrative costs can be 30% or even more with some companies, and certainly that's an idea that's on the table.
Jody, you want to respond to that?
Well, the only thing I would say is I think it's interesting. People, may be against a government system, but then when they say, well, if you're in Medicare, do you like it? Oh, yeah, they like it.
Right.
So I think that there's, polling and has shown that most people who are in Medicare are pretty happy with it. They may, find that they have to get supplemental kinds of insurance. But I think that's an interesting, part of this debate is that if people who are receiving the benefits are pretty happy with them, what does that say about trying to create a system that is more like that if they can get around the cost question?
Right. Is there any way of predicting how many people, if you had a government plan, would drop the insurance they have now and go to a government plan?
Well, it really depends what the plan is.
Right.
And again, the fear of of some is that if you're going to do what a lot of people are talking about, and this is what the Kennedy plan is based on, the Kennedy bill that is going through Congress now, is that the number of people who they don't want too many people to leave employer-sponsored plans, and they certainly don't want employers to stop offering the plans, because then the cost does go way up. But if you set, you have to then set all kinds of checks and balances for that to happen, and it also depends where you set those subsidies.
Let's go to Deborah next from Hartford. Hi, Deborah.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm an advocate of a single-payer public plan, and I guess because I think it's the best way to ensure universal access as well as keep costs in check. The data from European countries and Canada, I believe, is that they can cover their people with, as good a health care as we get at about half the cost per capita. But I guess my question is relating to the public relations aspect of this. I remember what happened back with the Clinton administration and how the powers that be in the health insurance industry were able to squash the initiative by basically scare ads on TV. And I guess what I would like to see is a strong offensive on the part of the Obama administration to, maybe do a town hall meeting kind of format whereby we would bring in Canadians and people from Western Europe, regular average citizens who are covered under their plans, and speak directly to the American people about the fact that there isn't a boogeyman out there that is making their insurance awful and that bad things are not going to happen to us if we adopt a plan more like theirs. I think that direct speaking to the American public in that kind of a forum would be very powerful in counteracting these lobbyists and these forces that I'm afraid are going to succeed in squashing this initiative, just like they were able to squash the initiative during the Clinton administration. So I guess I'd be interested in hearing your comments on
that. Thank you. Thanks for the call. Karen, you want to start?
Well, of course, the legislation that's moving through Congress from the major committees doesn't include a single-payer option, and so exactly how but at the same time there's been a lot of criticism from the conservative side, including ads that have been run by a group called Conservatives for Patient Rights, charging that we would end up with government run health care under the progressive proposals in Congress. So it seems to me, certainly, the evidence from Canada and from European countries tells us a lot about the quality of care that they have, the better outcomes that they have in those countries. We're not considering, or at least Congress is not considering, adopting a single payer plan. But I think that some kind of truth squatting about both what is in the bills in Congress, but also those charges about government-run health care being so bad would be quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what is currently being debated? How many bills are there, Jody?
Well, right now, there's really, in the Senate, they're the first ones out on this, as this bill through the Health Committee, the Kennedy bill. The folks on the Finance Committee are working on a bill. They want to try to have more of a compromise with the members, with the Republican members of their committee. They want to try to kind of avoid some of the PR problems that the Kennedy bill has had this week. Meanwhile, in the House, they're getting started, and we expect that they will have a bill that we will see late this week, and that they are supposed to start hearings on next week. But there may be other bills. Today, also, interestingly, I just saw something on this. There is former leaders of the Senate, Democrat Tom Daschle and Republicans Bob Dole and Howard Baker, have come together, and they have their own proposal, which is kind of interesting. Basically, it's a plan that would cost $1.2 trillion over 10 years, raises half the money through changes to Medicare and Medicaid programs, and half from new taxes on employer-sponsored health insurance. On the question of creating this government-sponsored insurance program, they have a whole different take on it. They recommend giving states the option of setting up public plans with the fallback that if the country doesn't make significant progress, and I don't know how that would be measured, in providing health care to all Americans within 5 years, the president could come up with a federally sponsored plan. So that may get some traction. You've got three, former Senate majority leaders behind this. So I think we'll be hearing about this proposal, too.
Yeah. Thank you both very much for being with us. And we'll be in touch with you again. A lot more to happen on all of this as the summer goes on. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks to Jody Schneider, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly, Karen Davenport, who is director of health policy at the Center for American Progress. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Rob Schroeder for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. We are going to Springfield. I want to tell you about this because we'd like to fill this trip. It's a great deal, and we have wonderful scholars going with us. It's something that I've thought about doing for years now, and it happens to be, of course, Abraham Lincoln's 200th birthday this year, so this is the year to do it. We're leaving the morning of Friday, October 2nd, returning the evening of Sunday, October 4, and we'll be visiting many of the sites in the place that Abraham Lincoln called his only home, really, Springfield, Illinois. His only house is there. The Lincoln Museum, fairly new and wonderful, is there. The New Salem we'll be going to, which is where he learned the law. And we have a couple wonderful scholars with us to take the best trip with us. We'll have Professor Steve Rogsted, who is teaching at UW Parkside and the Kenosha Civil War Museum. Douglas Wilson, also joining us, an eminent Lincoln scholar, co-director of the Lincoln Studies Center at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois, and author of Lincoln's Sword, The President and the Power of Words. To reserve your spot on this terrific trip, call Katie. The number is 414-227-2047. And she'll give you all the details on the prices and everything. And we hope to have you join us. It should be a terrific trip. I'm Kathleen Dunn. More ahead here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.